Cheltenham, he will just fix you up like that.
Well, yeah, I was worried I wouldn't be able to talk to him in the game either. So, my apologies.
Okay, Facebook. He's on our Facebook group. A lot of ways to communicate with Matt Cheltenham. And also us. I'm not saying don't communicate to us. We're happy to hear from you. But just if we're not online and he is, it gives you three people to get your question. Because as we've said before, we don't want the technical difficulties to stand in the way of the learning experience. And the time in here should be about learning and which point. Let's segue into some learning.
We are going to speak today about the King of Kong. Who all watched the King of Kong? Raise them up high.
Excellent. That's what we want to see.
You see the King of Kong, or are you just waving at us?
No, okay.
Okay, so we had two or three that did not see the King of Kong. Just because you didn't see it doesn't relieve you of seeing it. So we need to make sure that you have an opportunity to see it. Forward. Matter of fact, your blog topic is going to be on that this week.
Yes.
So what I want to discuss with you, we're going to run through this very quickly, is the categories and genres of games. We had two assignments from the previous discussion that you guys needed to take a look at. Those were those two chronologies of games. And what I want to highlight is two things. The gaming industry really took off in the 70s and 80s. Around here somewhere, those of you who are interested in it, I have a book called The Ultimate History of Video Games. You can take a look at it, but it's really an in-depth look at how these video games came about in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, what period of time did Billy Mitchell start his gaming career? Speak up.
In the early 80s, like 82.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's in that 80s period. So these games were becoming mainstreamed. Another thing that was happening in the 70s and 80s, in parallel to arcade games, was Dungeons and Dragons. And this is taking us, ultimately, you're seeing a convergence between the arcade games and the role-playing games that what we would call tabletop games. You're going to hear this term used if you troll the forums or read about this. It's called a tabletop games. There are people who actually play these games in person. And we'll talk briefly about it momentarily. But there's a lot of different categories of games that have evolved since the 80s. And one of the things that we see in the context of Billy and Steve is this arcade experience. We also have adventure games. It's an important genre, category of games that we need to be aware of. Board games. Now, who can tell me real quick, review Emergence and Progression from Jesper Juul. Emergence and Progression games. These are very important. Lee?
Emergence was a set of rules that go together to make a whole bunch of different outcomes.
Right.
And Progression was pretty much progress.
And I want you to mull over that. Progress. Finish your statement on the progression.
You just progress through levels of the game.
So there's sequential levels.
Yeah, sequential.
And advancement. When you think about Donkey Kong and when you think about Lotro, I want you to think, is it emergence? Is it progression? Maybe that's not even something you want to adhere to, but mull that over as you're thinking about it. Board games, console games, first-person shooters, MMORPGs, we should all be somewhat familiar with that. You can express them on a console, you can express them on a PC, real-time strategy, role-playing games, simulation, and sports. Now, these are a lot of game categories, I think, that are fairly encompassing, and the purpose is just to give you some ways to organize the actual games. And the games are very important to us, but don't forget, what did Jesper Juul say about the relationship between fiction and games? Speak up.
All games had fiction.
I can't hear hardly anything. I've been subjected to a lot of gunshot fire over the years. Speak up.
Try all again. Games had fiction.
All games had fiction. Anybody else want to add to that?
And rules.
Fiction plus rules. That's the key concept of half real.
Dan, get up to the table. When you come in late, you got to get to the table.
The best, I'm going to let you in the table.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Arcade games. It's a mechanical game or electronic game. Amusement arcades. What's the name of the arcade that was featured prominently in King of Kong?
Fun Spot.
Let's try it again. You hit it.
Fun Stop?
Oh, no.
Fun
you missed
spot.
It.
Spot. Spot.
Fun Spot. Spot. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not Donkey Kong. That's a game he played, which is an arcade game found in the place called Fun Spot. right? That's the classic 1982 game, right? This is an arcade game. Pac-Man, the pinball type of machines. This could be mechanical, remember, an arcade game. And a lot of, you know, we demoed Pac-Man a little bit to you last time. Who's played Pac-Man? Has everybody here played Pac-Man? It's one of those things that's like playing Monopoly. We've all played Pac-Man. Right, so we're familiar with the arcade game. We're familiar with Donkey Kong as one of those games. I demoed Zork to you last time. This is an adventure game, and it's a role-playing or computer game. Everybody takes a fantasy role, and an episodic adventure story. Maybe it's episodic, maybe it isn't, but it is an adventure story. Zork and Myst. Professor Clayton has an affinity and a fondness for Myst. You've taught Myst in your courses in the past.
Mm-hmm. Years ago, a decade ago. Yeah.
Board game. Who hasn't played Monopoly? Amir hasn't played Monopoly. So, Monopoly chess. Which type of game is this? Emergence or progression?
Emergence.
Are you sure?
Set of rules.
Are you sure it's emergence?
It's a little bit of both.
In a way.
It's not a trick question. I think it's emergence. So.
It's the same.
I think it's a little bit of a level.
I get it.
Your character is becoming more of a...
When you assume the role of the car, or what's your everybody's got a favorite piece?
Thimble.
Hat with a thimble. Money hat. Thimble with a hat.
Do you really assume the role of that thimble?
Yes.
And just vicariously live the Monopoly experience.
I shake myself.
Shape yourself. You like Evan's contorted into a thimble.
So it's been on fiction, but it's got some, and particularly when you get over to the fat cat area, mm-hmm. you know, and the first time I grew up before people, there was a lot of. It was a real luxury to have a jet air flight, and going to New York was a big deal for a Texan like me. And you know, the notion of Broadway, Park Place, very exotic. And so the fiction was a little palpable, and maybe it is to some of you all.
See, I lived a Baltic Avenue life, so a different story altogether.
Okay.
So. Console, I think there's a substantial difference. The only reason why I highlight PC and console in here, there's a substantial difference when you're the way in which you interface with the game. You know, remember in Pac-Man and Donkey Kong, what's the control interface? How would you describe the way you project yourself into the game?
Joystick.
Joystick? Like a single, like is there like is one you, joystick and
you hit with your pointer?
Two, maybe one or two buttons,
you
tops.
Hit with your pointer, like your thumb.
Yeah. This, look at the, I don't know, all of you can't see it down here. If you look at that controller, there's about 800 buttons on today's console. My kid, when he kicks me to death in Dead or Alive, which is a game I have up there on the Xbox 360, Dad, if you just hit A, A, B, L, L, C simultaneously, you could do the finishing maneuvers. Okay, Mikey, he's 10. I was an Atari 2600. There was one controller, one little button. Now, that's my kind of joystick. This is beyond joysticks. So consoles are a different animal, and I think the fiction and the experience is different in a console than it is when you're interfacing with things on a PC. First-person shooters. Who's played a first-person shooter game? Everybody. You violent bunch of folks here. Amazing. First-person shooters.
Justin, you have a comment?
On console or PC?
Either one. Doesn't matter. So it's an FPS. Whatever they're... I don't think there's a board game first-person shooter, but... All right, roll. All right, you're dead, buddy.
Shoot some ladders.
There you go. The old-school first-person shooter was shoot some ladders. So you have Doom. This is an older version of Doom. I mean, you can see the graphics are what we call CGA grade. But what's the key element? Is there fiction in these first-person shooters?
Yeah.
So tell me about the fiction and rules in the first-person shooters. I mean, how do you guys feel about those?
Well, you're through the eyes. It's first person. That's kind of an important one.
But it is. It's kind of self. What's important about it, Dan?
It just minimizes the effect of violence.
See, well, Evan jumped in there. It does what?
It minimizes the reality of violence. Actually, I think it increases it over a third person because you're never going to take that perspective versus if you're actually killing someone.
That's how you're talking about. I'm saying in terms of my mind, how I operate in the real world.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah. Desensitizing.
Right.
Desensitizing.
But it's also still based on a real world, and all these first-person shooters, there's still a sense of gravity. You can jump, but you're always going to return back to land.
Yeah.
You can run, but only at a certain speed. And a lot of them, and the more advanced ones, depending on you know, how much weight you're carrying around,
Okay, what's the number one first-person shooter game? Just holler it out. Don't
Counter-Strike.
Halo 3. Doesn't matter. Any console.
Halo.
Would be the biggest.
Counter-Strike, Halo, Call of Duty.
Counter-Strike's
good. When you did it, what was the one you played? She's a Halo gal.
Go outside the United States.
How many know Halo?
Halo. Game over.
Tell me who the protagonist of Halo is.
Master Chief.
There's fiction in Halo, Professor. What's the story of Halo?
There's an evil alien covenant that wants to destroy the universe mistakenly, and you're trying to stop it.
Is there a world?
There's many worlds.
Yeah. Oh, many worlds. So could would it be if we took Master Chief, that background, out of Halo, and just said go forth and kill? Would the game be as enjoyable?
Yeah,
I think it
would. Come on, let's see a show of hands. It would be that enjoyable.
That's
just to kill time.
It would be a direct negative.
It would still be enjoyable.
You would enjoy
it? It would be enjoyable. It just wouldn't be as.
Right. Exactly. Nowadays,
there's not a storyline to it, but that's the point of Xbox Live.
Yes,
exactly. Xbox Live.
It has both aspects of that game in it.
But you have the option to
play multiplayer.
But every one of those guns in Xbox Live is still based on the story.
I have a friend who's never played the single player. Never ever played, and all he does is play. He does no, he doesn't. I try to tell him like, well, because I've read the books, little books in it. I was like, hey, here's what he's like. No.
So you're saying what I heard, almost half of you say through your show of hands is you could have an as enjoyable experience inside of Halo without that background, without that milieu, than what you operate. Being Master Chief doesn't matter to you.
I'm not Master Chief. I'm an elite.
Okay. being akin to Master Chief. All right, so that's a first-person shooter. It's an interesting dichotomy. And if that were the case, I would suggest you may want to be, it's more of an emergent game in many respects, bounded by rules. Massively multiplayer online role-playing game. What's a good example of that? I think we're playing it, right? WoW's not really the best example for us. That's like a 10-point reduction in class participation. So we've seen massive, and we've seen massive. This is an example of a game your professor and I used to play. It's called Dark Age of Camelot. And that thing, when they did raids, they were massive. There were hundreds and hundreds of people. It was one of the most absurd-looking things in the world when you would see 300 people running in these massive quests to just slay certain creatures. What were they called? Their master levels? I can't remember that there was some, Uber raid type function, but it was massive. And we saw a little bit about that from MMOGChart.com, the types of subscription volumes were, we're approaching 11 million on the World of Warcraft, so it's pretty substantial group of people playing it. PC game, we mentioned a little bit about this, anything played on a personal computer. And the key difference is the interface is different. I think there's been, when you hear about, if you read these trade rags and you see the controversies involved in Conan, for example, because Conan and Lotro, they have plans to port these games to a console. Now, tell me a little bit, how could the console experience change gameplay or change how the story unfolds? And I don't know the answer to this, I'm just curious your perception.
Can make the interface a little more fluid.
Depending on how they want to do it, I don't know if they're going to have a keyboard hookup or anything. Typing would be a lot harder.
If it's on a console,
PlayStation 2.
You can get a mic and speak into it, but if you have a computer, you can just plug in your mic and get TeamSpeak on there.
But so is everybody going to shoutcast then, like on the mic, or are you going to have to select a player and direct that towards them? Or
when you guys are talking about the human interface experience, did those things impact the enjoyment of the narrative or the enjoyment of the game itself, or does it make it a different experience? It does.
If you're trying to enjoy the storyline of a game, a narrative, and then someone is intruding on your experience, shouting at you about, hey, did you see the game yesterday? It's going to change a little bit about what's going on. What you're perceiving.
So immersion quality diminishes.
Yeah, it can take you out.
I think the difference in graphics also would affect it for me. Like, I enjoy watching cutscenes on N64. Depending, I played on the PC and on the Xbox 360.
Right.
And I noticed when I'm running around on the 360, I'm just so much more into it because the graphics are so much better.
I mean, I hear this from my kids. My boys were playing Halo on Xbox the other night. And they're like, this really enhances the enjoyment. This 3D graphics are so much superior to what you'll find in a lot of this.
One thing that was pointed out in a recent article in a journal was that PC games have a lot more room for text, so that the textual dimension of play and consequently some aspects of the story, not all aspects of the story are carried by text, but some are intrinsically greater. And it was talking about games that have to be modified, the way they're modified, to take them from PC to console, because for one thing, you're sitting 10, 12 feet away from the TV screen. It doesn't matter if you've got great resolution, you're still just not going to want to read a lot of the lines of text.
So PC, and there will be we can acknowledge that there will be a different experience how you perceive things, not only by virtue of the fact that it's in a video game, but how the video game is expressed is going to change the way in which you enjoy the experience. Real-time strategy. Who's played an RTS? I've got Age of Empires. What's another couple examples of RTS?
Starcraft. Red Alert and Conquer. Red Alert 2.
Command and Conquer, I know that one.
Battle
for the Middle Earth. I know we talked about that at length. You've enjoyed
Warcraft.
That.
Warcraft.
Yeah.
Starcraft.
Same mechanics, probably.
Very similar, but different.
Age of Empires, Age of Mythology.
Now, if you compare, how would you compare and contrast the story elements of a real-time strategy game in a first versus a first-person shooter? I mean, Battle for the Middle Earth is very close to that, right? You've got the same world, different experiences.
Okay. You're watching it all unfold in front of you from like a high aerial view, usually.
Could a board game be a real-time strategy?
I've seen some board games.
Risk
is a great example.
That's not real-time.
They're turn-based. Turn-based. The computer facilitates the real-time capability. And there are turn-based computer games as well.
That's what I was wondering, if it had to be like a computer game for it to be that.
For another thing, the difference between the storytelling, in first person you're almost always getting the like single person experience. In real time you can experience multiple storylines.
You can bounce around. I know they've added heroes and different things that you could assume, so you can jump into it at different levels. So Evan's deal was that you can see it from this huge third-person level, the first person, you've descended down into the story itself. Now, this is an interesting piece that we're going to talk about. Lee and I want to talk about this. Lee, tell me, this was my era of Dungeons & Dragons right here. This is older school D&D. They're up to the fourth edition of this, and it has a very rich history. Who read the Wikipedia article on D&D? I think it's a wonderfully written article, and it's a great history there. Gary Gygax is no longer with us, by the way. He's passed on beyond this world, but he left a really unique legacy and influenced the mechanics that you'll see in MMORPG. The fundamental game mechanics, the emergent component of Neverwinter Nights, is purely based around the underlying combat resolution. Now, this is where I want you to help me out. Who here has played Dungeons & Dragons? So this is usually the ratio. Maybe there's three or four of us out of a class of 14 or 15 who've actually experienced this. When you resolve combat in Lord of the Rings or the first-person shooter, how's combat being resolved? Mechanically, the emergent property. I mean, it's a rhetorical question because I'm running on 3 minutes. I'm trying to time myself. There is a set of rules and bonuses and modifiers. So if you pick up a piece of loot in any of our MMORPGs, what's usually associated with the loot? Think about the attributes of the loot, the thing that you work so hard to get. Why
stats,
are you after it?
DPS.
We'll keep going on that. Stats, DPS.
And increased ability to get more loot.
Okay, but go with the stats and DPS thing.
To kill more stuff.
To improve your character.
So what does the loot have with it? There's going to be something, you can pull up a property sheet on that piece of loot, and what would it say?
Plus stuff.
Plus something, right? There's some underlying game mechanics. The basic attributes of a character, your avatar, the person you're projecting yourself through in a role-playing game, that you're going to act out the role of a character. This character is going to approximate something in reality, and they have attributes, which you'll see in LOTRO. If you hit C in LOTRO, you have what is commonly known as a character sheet. That character sheet is an outgrowth of the mechanics of playing Dungeons & Dragons. What are the attributes in D&D of a character?
Do you want just like strength, dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, charisma?
I mean, these are some basic attributes that determine how successful your character will be. Some people are stronger, better athletes. If you have higher intel in a Dungeons & Dragons, what would be a natural character class you'd migrate into?
Wizard,
right? So it's these interesting balancing acts that you play in these really sophisticated rock, scissors, paper. These rules are very extensive. And combat gets resolved in Dungeons & Dragons through something called a D20. Who knows what a D20 is?
20-sided die.
20-sided die, that's right. So this is a thing.
Showdown.
What's that?
It'll be showdown.
There you go. 20-sided dice are imperative to the resolution of combat and other encounters in Dungeons & Dragons. And underneath all those mechanics in a first-person shooter, a real-time strategy, or an MMO, is a combat resolution system. It may look 3D, it may look all this reality, but there are some underlying game mechanics and rules that are very emergent and has the property of those Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game. There are things that are, if you look at a combat table in a Dungeons & Dragons space, you would have an armor class, and you would have something called a two-hit roll. You then roll the die, and you'd resolve the combat. So this is the fundamental things. Why I went through this whole discussion with you is to demonstrate. We've had all these arcade games, but the fundamental combat resolution and sophisticated mechanics are being informed and fed by these tabletop role-playing games and by games like Monopoly. So Parker Brothers, TSR, they all have a large influence on the state of games today. They're going to continue in the physical world, but they're certainly informing the gameplay and how we experience it underneath. That is really the background I wanted to throw together. There's a couple other ones, but it's not really directly germane to our more important discussion.
Yes.
Isn't TSR the Wizards
of
the Coast?
They're in Wizards of the Coast in Hard Hats.
What is that?
He's good at drums.
Just curious.
This is a picture of Steve Wiebe. I was drinking beer with him in Washington.
Wow.
So this was last year. I went up to last October. Let's call him and say, I said, Steve, it's Matt Hall. He goes, yeah, hey, how you doing, Matt? I said, you want to have a beer? He said, yeah. He's a great guy. I've spent a little time with him, and he's become quite the Seattle celebrity. But Professor, I'll let you want to kick off our conversation about the King of Kong.
No, not quite yet.
Well, while we're waiting for Professor Clayton to click,
relaxing on a couch amongst friends, and they are, and that's fun. But competitive gaming, when you want to attach your name to a world record, when you want your name written into history, you have to pay the price.
With this.
You have to pay the price.
Send in a videotape.
You have to pay the price.
It's so funny.
So I'm calling up my text message that I got when I was at dinner with my family from a very excited Professor Matt Hall, who was sitting in the Longhorn Steakhouse. Is that where it was?
Someplace? I can't remember where I was at.
Yeah, I think it says Longhorn Steakhouse right here. It said, check your text message. And he had attached his picture to the picture of Steve Wiebe that you have there. So
you mean Steve Wiebe?
You're the guy that's met him. Did he call himself Wiebe or Wiebe?
No, we talked a lot about that every later today.
So, what'd y'all think of that movie?
I liked it. It got me very frustrated. So, even in the end, I thought Billy Mitchell was...
No, I liked the end, though. Just the little, yeah, like, it was kind of just a small little piece. Like, by the way.
Right. But I was so angry. Conquered the entire book. After they renounced the DVD score, I was just like, come on. That's BS.
So, yeah, Dan.
Since we were on Wikipedia so much last night, I looked up the King of Kong on Wikipedia, and apparently there were several dramatic elements that were kind of added. One of which was when they rejected his score, which you just mentioned, the high score was actually still his. He'd won another one. Just not, it wasn't up to like a million or something like that.
His being Steve Wiebe's.
So, what is that, how does that make you feel? What you're saying is that the filmmakers
made an
artistic decision to just change a little bit, rearrange a little things, suppress a little here. augment a little there. To, how does
it certainly increased the feeling of the film. It was like, now I'm into this film.
Yeah, but you feel ripped off at all?
I had a hard little time taking the film seriously. Anyhow.
Yes.
The characters were so over the top that having found out that they mastered it, it's not a big difference because it almost seemed detached from reality to me anyhow.
So you didn't... that sounds like a critique, Colin. Didn't like the movie?
I enjoyed the movie, but I definitely found that the personalities of some of the characters got in the way. I couldn't relate to any of them. I thought it was sort of interesting, the conflicts between them, but I didn't really like any. So, yeah, I think that is a critique.
Relate to the characters. Let's think about that, because you hear that all the time, don't you, in a literature class. I couldn't relate to the characters. What does that mean?
That meant to me that just they didn't seem like human beings to me. They didn't behave in ways that I recognize the people, that I recognize people around me as behaving in.
So it didn't mean exactly the same thing as identifying. Identify a character is another term that you hear a lot, and particularly in film criticism, which has to do with seeing a part of yourself in that character. I'm just trying to extrapolate from what you say. You see a little difference in relate to the person and identify with the person.
A slight one, yeah, because I did find myself occasionally identifying, seeing, like the part where Steve is playing his taped game and his son is like, yeah, wait, my first thought was, that's horrible, he's abandoning his son for like this world record, and then I thought to myself, I'm like, if I was doing that, would I stop the game? And I realized, no, probably not, which was a tough realization.
So how many, let's stick on this for a minute, how many of you all can identify a type of movie you really don't like?
Yeah.
Okay, Lee had his hand up first. What kind of movie do you really not like?
I do not like war movies.
War movies, okay. Go ahead.
Chick flicks.
Chick flicks. A chick flick is, in my view, not a good term. It's a kind of loaded term. Let us say...
Poorly written romance.
A poorly written romance. But you have indeed raised a kind of gender issue. So you're suggesting that you don't like movies that at least a lot of the marketing machine wants to direct at younger women.
Yes.
Right.
I don't either.
You don't either. But somebody, and you know, I wouldn't want to typecast anybody in this room. And you know, Lee just broke stereotype by saying I'm a guy and I don't like war films. So you know, and you've broken the stereotype saying I'm a female and I don't like romantic comedies for women, or what Madison Avenue thinks women ought to like. So you know, that's right. But clearly, Madison Avenue in Hollywood thinks there's a target audience for movie, for types of movies, for genres of movies. And those target audiences have a lot to do with identification, don't they? You can identify with X, or at least Madison. You know, think in stereotypes for a minute, right? You know they're trying to get the crowd that identifies with Prada-buying, Valley Girl, sentimental young tweens. You got something to say?
Sort of. I was going to say about movies I don't like.
Yeah.
Ones that are extremely predictable, because then there's just no point in seeing it.
Now, that's not a genre.
Right. Exactly.
Though lots of genres are more conventional. We call it, when it's really predictable, we call it conventional.
You're thinking of horror movies.
Okay, yes, Justin.
Yeah, the type of movie that I really don't like. Adjective movie in the title.
Like scary?
Scary, or
I love this genre. I haven't even heard of it.
Sarcasm genre.
Sam.
I was wondering, when you say, like, identify with the characters, do you mean, like, see yourself in a certain...
Yes.
Well, I mean, I like the Lord of the Rings, I like this movie, but I don't really see much of myself in the character. I just kind of, like, intrigued by
Great. So that's also true. I mean, we're never, in a way, getting three principles of audience response to movies. One is that you don't have to identify with a character to like a movie. And you can identify with a character to dislike a movie. That you can have other reasons for being drawn to a movie besides identification. But identification is one. And we're going to come back to your relate to in a second. Kyle.
Just off of someone else had said, like, about not liking movies because they're poorly written. I don't know, for me, like, there's not any genre of movie that I dislike. There are some that most of the genre I do not like, but there's something, there's at least one or two movies in every genre that I don't know, I think rings true for me or that I can really enjoy.
Catholic taste, we call that. Yeah. Eclectic. Flexible.
Just imply judgment in that.
No. Just really discriminating, smart, and...
There's nothing implied about it.
Yeah, Dan.
Gore movies. And I'm thinking something about, like, Saw movies. And I think there's a statement to be said about the genres themselves being flexible categories, like something might be horror to one person and gore to another. And so I might say I don't like gore, so I move all the gore movies into horror.
I don't like gore movies either, except some of them.
Just talking about, like, poorly written things. Some movies are just so poorly written that they're great, that they're fun. Like,
there's that too. What's the name of that genre? Do you have a name for that genre?
I think things are Z movie or something.
Z movie? That's interesting. I haven't heard that, but it's a good name for it. It's often called Kitsch. K-I-T-C-H?
Things like
Plan
9 from Outer Space.
Plan 9 from Outer Space is often regarded as the Kitsch movie for it because it's so famous for being
so bad.
But, okay, enough of this genres of movies. Really, I'm very happy that we began to get this notion that there's categories that marketing machines and directors and the whole apparatus want you to, want to target at niche audiences, and that we as viewers can have varying relationships to those niches. What happens if you do identify with a movie? If you really identify with a character in a movie or the whole movie, like the way the Graduate has been re-released recently. Have you all heard of The Graduate? Well, it was on my mind because it was, a big movie that supposedly captured the spirit of a whole generation at the moment it was released. So what's a movie that you can answer this question two ways. Either you think you're supposed, that they clearly thought you were supposed to identify with, or one that you actually do really identify with, or at a stage in your life, God, I remember when I was 7. I can see that. I can really see you at the Thermopylae. Of course, you'd be dead, too.
Well, it's not sure what
other?
One that people talk about a lot is Reality Bites. I haven't actually seen it.
That's okay.
Are we talking about movies that define a generation or something?
No, just one that... Have you never had an experience that you watched a movie and you kind of thought,
count my finger on them.
God, that was
cool, right?
I so identified with that. What did you say?
I wish I was one of them. Cool Runnings. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It was
a great movie.
Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks. Well, I've seen all those so many times. Nothing?
Has anyone seen it? You're seeing Gross Point Blank? Anybody?
Yeah, yeah, I love Gross Point Blank.
That's a great movie.
I used to live there. Does that count as identification?
Yep. This is interesting. Because I want to be able to talk about the process of identification, which is one of the film terms that we didn't introduce early on, about how do you identify with a character in a movie. What does a filmmaker do to make you identify with the hero?
Or not identify. You're talking about identification. Can it be defined by not? I mean, if I say to you, world record headquarters,
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It certainly knows how to make antipathy. Let's move on. I think I'll find the right moment to discuss the mechanism of identification. Let's talk more directly about this movie.
I really relate to him.
You do?
Yeah, I think about it.
Okay. Because
with video games, I'm kind of like him. I just go until I get it, and I'll sit there and play until 3 a.m. until I finish my mission. Whatever I need to do has to be done.
And so, unlike Colin, who didn't identify with anybody, so you do. Anybody else relate to him or identify with him, Justin?
Well, I just feel like his personality kind of like doesn't really stand up for himself. You know.
And you didn't like that, or you did like that?
I don't know. It makes him seem more like a real person. It's just,
uh-huh. I kind of relate with Steve Wiebe, just because they said near the beginning that he was always in a constant search for perfection on the game. And that's something I find myself doing a lot with different video games and stuff. Like right now, when I'm not doing Lotro or homework or any stuff like that, I'm on a quest to get every achievement in Assassin's Creed, which means find every flag in every city. I have one city and the kingdom left it.
And that's sort of like what Evan was saying. I mean, those are related. And interestingly, you know, somebody mentioned complex characters. Well, we've already gotten a complexity, haven't we, in this man, which is he's both driven for perfection and he feels like he's a little bit of an inferiority complex or insecurity of some kind. Is that what you were saying? What else do you want to say about him?
He's always been number two.
Number two.
He seems like a basic perfectionist, so much so that it seems like he wants perfection that he's unable to settle for anything else.
What do you think of his family life?
His wife was my favorite character in the movie, because I can't believe she put up with what she
did. I'm
like
actually
going to that
in a
video.
Okay, what about his children?
His children there. Seem normal.
Yeah. How? How do you grow up normal in that family?
Children are resilient.
There you go.
I like what that little girl had to say when they were going to do the world record thing.
That was awesome.
And she's like, what's the big deal about Guinness Book of World Records? People ruin their lives to get in that
boat. Stares right at
that was great. Right. Okay, in the back of the car, right?
Yeah.
It was just like... My favorite thing was when she said, oh, I'm the wife of the Donkey Kong guy.
What an identifier. So, who here can talk to us about Billy Mitchell's character? Who is the
pompous,
character sketch?
Very pompous, arrogant, confident, overconfident a bit. Just
why? He doesn't lose.
Cheater.
Yeah. But I mean,
he needs to be the center of attention.
I don't see how he could really be any different. He's been the best at something for over 20 years. I mean, that kind of has to happen to someone, I would think. If you've spent 20 years telling yourself and everyone else telling you that you are the best at something,
it's time to do something else.
Yeah, I know. He never moved on, though, from
right.
that. He's just kind of.
I don't think it would change, like, my personality, though, if that happened. I'd just be like, oh, that's cool, and then I would go and do something else. Like, it wouldn't be my entire identity. And he seemed to just, like, completely let it take over himself.
If you look at Steve Wiebe, I mean, he kind of let it go after he got his score taken away. Well, if he did. And then, I mean, he kept staying with it, but then he kind of, like, I don't know. He has a wife on the side. I feel
well,
like
I wanted to, what are my initials on my video game?
Oh, yeah.
USA.
USA.
USA. Let me say right before that.
Oh, Ty.
T-I-E.
Like, T-I-E.
What was it interesting about, what did Billy have?
It was a Statue of Liberty. Oh. I thought he was going to go with the G-O-D, like he was.
Yeah, I thought,
like,
it,
I thought
I,
he was
going to
be like.
Too. I would have guessed that, but I have friends like that, so.
So, would you rather be Billy Mitchell?
No.
Or Steve
Wiebe? I have to cut my hair.
Like, yeah. It's kind of like he has, like, yeah, he's like a bad guy.
Don't knock
him away because he's all negative and stuff. But I almost felt bad for him at a certain point because he has that like superiority complex. So he didn't move on from the game because now that he was number one, he had that and he could hold on to it. But then like it was those 20 years were all about like holding on to that record.
It's kind
and
of
he
pathetic.
Couldn't compete because like he didn't want to have to eventually. World record headquarters.
So the filmmaker succeeded in generating sympathy for an unappealing character.
Yeah, I didn't like him at all.
Which is another interesting thing.
I want to be clear. Who's unappealing?
Interesting.
Who's unappealing?
Who is unappealing?
Both.
To me, Billy was.
All right, I want to see who thinks Billy's unappealing.
From the movie.
Who thinks Steve is unappealing? Anybody?
Just seems like a great guy.
I like Steve. He's a great guy. He's kind of a winner.
That was very.
Yes. When they went into his house, did his machine, he didn't like speak up and get upset about it.
There would have been a can of something opened up on somebody. Yeah. They come in my garage.
Okay, Chris likes both the characters.
I mean, like, Steve Wiebe has been like always challenging. Like, he never fears to challenge anybody. Like, he drives for the win. Like, it's a really like motivation. He is all really motivated to do something, and it's really good. Bill Mitchell has been like fast in like even the video gaming. Like he's been like the best in like more than 20 years. Like being the best is also like I think it's a good character because you always have to like drive to be the best, and he was the best. And I don't know if I was like in his place, I would try to do the same, like to keep my score the best, because it's like a human character to be the best, to try to be the best.
Strong.
Yes. I know the sarcasm and arrogance of Billy Mitchell. I think the only reason I don't like him, and or not necessarily that I don't respect him, is for not coming and playing live when Steve Wiebe came all the way from his hometown, all the way to Fun Spot, and Billy Mitchell walks in and can't play.
Dan has a response to that.
Once again, I think that was an artistic choice. It says they did play live at one point on the Wikipedia article. And also that they were good friends.
Good friends, but friendly terms.
Did you sense that they were friends when you met him?
Well, I'm going to hold that answer to that question to the very end of the class.
Excellent response. Sorry I even asked. Yes.
Wikipedia said that at one point they actually didn't interview together. But then, like, I don't know. Deteriorated or something.
Right, because in the movie they portrayed it as if he was just being a complete idiot to Steve Wiebe, and he was just being disrespectful. And
I don't know, you think Barack and McCain are hanging out shooting shots together or something right now? Is it the same kind of rivalry, you know?
And all of Bill Mitchell's friends seem to be against Steve Wiebe behind his back, even though they were talking to him. All that stuff, they were still on Billy Mitchell's side, and they were so fast to put Billy Mitchell's new high score on the internet without even examining it. Meanwhile, Steve Wiebe, they go to his house, check his machine, this could be invalid. It's all, I mean, it was contorted with the movie, but I'm just going based on what I saw.
So, did you think the movie was fair to both characters?
No, I think it represented them both badly. I think it made Steve Wiebe out to be more of a loser than he actually is. And I think it made Billy Mitchell out to be more of a jackass than he actually is. Just for the sake of entertainment value.
Okay. It seems that the movie really tried to make Billy into the villain. I mean, and I'm sure, especially like with like what you were saying, the high scores, examining the machine, and then with Billy's tape, I have to imagine that more than they showed actually happened in real life.
Yeah.
That they actually really looked into the blurs on Billy's screen, and that the goo or whatever on the chip in Steve's machine actually could have made a difference.
Pause on that point, Kyle. Who is Mr. Awesome?
Ron.
Billy's rival.
Who's Mr. Awesome?
Royce.
Why is he relevant in this whole conversation where Kyle was at in the garage invasion moment?
He's the one that gave Steve the board.
The board, yeah.
The rank? I mean, the board?
Yes.
They could have rigged that? Is that what you're saying?
That's what they wanted to do, kind of.
Do you think Mr. Awesome would do such a thing?
No.
Yeah.
It seemed like the kind of guy who would.
Yeah. Awesome.
Chris?
Yeah. No, he was...
He seemed like he could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's been calling himself a Mr. Awesome.
So, yeah.
That
arrogance.
But didn't he seem, did he feel awesome when he described how he sort of felt ripped off later? Yeah. Did he want a little, he wanted his own TV show or something?
What do you think of the pathetic quotient of this movie?
It was amusing.
It was very high.
Very high. Did the movie make you think these were pathetic people living pathetic lives?
A little bit.
It made them seem more like creepers.
Or did it make you think there's more to this world than I realize? I mean, you can see all kinds
of... As in the pathos part of this?
No, I mean, not in the pathos part of it in the sense of deep feeling, but just in the, get a life.
Well, they seemed happy enough with the lives that they had. I mean, I don't see any problem.
We didn't see much of that. Billy Mitchell seemed like he was pretty successful in his hot sauce business or whatever.
And the Rev, although he was kind of disillusioned with... Because he said something about how he doesn't have to do this, but it's obligatory duty to do it for the people that he's created it for. It's kind of disillusioned, but I mean, he seemed happy enough.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't. Another way to put it would be, if the movie condescends to these characters, that might be a flaw in the movie making. You think it would be first of all, do you think the movie condescends to its characters? And second of all, if it does, is that a flaw in the movie? Yeah, Jim, you got something to say?
I don't think it condescends to the characters.
Good. It treats them with the dignity they deserve. To the extent that they have any dignity.
At the end, they do.
What are you trying to say?
They do bother to let you know what happens as far as the record being. Steve Wiebe setting the record at the end.
Uh-huh.
They let you know that, and they make a kind of a big deal out of it. So I don't think it comes to the characters.
I got the feeling that it sort of just put the characters out there. It didn't try to make them look like a bunch of 40-year-old losers, but it also didn't really try to add anything, and it didn't try to say, well, this really is an incredible competition. Like, it seemed to me that it just sort of put them out there and let the viewers decide whether it's really cool that they're comfortable being so competitive with video games, or if they need
that's more interesting hobby. I suspect that's what they were aiming for.
This isn't a movie for somebody who's not interested in gaming.
Well, I think they want it to be a movie for somebody that's not interested in gaming.
I guess that's why they made it.
You know, they want it to be something that will bring you in. I mean, somebody walked into this class, I think it was you, that walked in saying, you know, I didn't expect I'd like a movie about Donkey Kong. Was that you that said that? Somebody said that.
Well, is the movie really about Donkey Kong?
Or is it about life?
What's it about? What's the movie about in its essence?
The competition.
It's more like life around the Donkey Kong.
So that's one thing. Milieu, the kind of environment that surrounds it. So a movie that just investigates a world. And that kind of movie would be more like a documentary, wouldn't it?
This is Margaret Mead at its finest in many respects.
That's right. It's a kind of participant observer watching this culture. That is another way I call it milieu. You could also say culture. It's a documentary kind of exploring this oddball culture.
And the culture has shared norms, values, vocabulary, experiences. They certainly have all that around Twin Galaxies.
Yeah. So there's that. Then... there's a movie about competition. Is it a typical sports movie? Does it follow the formula of a sports movie?
Come on, think again.
I think it really kind of is. You've got the underdog, sort of, who kind of comes from a background that, you know, just a mysterious background. And then, you know, he works really hard, and he finally gets, you know, to where he thinks he has it, and it's taken away. And so he has to work really hard and finally, in the end, win. You know, through the disappointments and the failures.
It really puts you in his shoes as well. Like, in the movie, you're like rooting for him. You're like, like, come on, Steve, and then he gets it, and then you're like, you're crushed, and then you take the score away, and then they bring you back up, and you're all excited. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, our professor's pulled that model up. You want to say something about Rocky?
Not going to say anything. See if someone else has an observation to make.
Parallels the movie very well.
Do you guys know the main characters in Rocky the First? Anybody?
Adrian.
Who's that?
His girlfriend.
No. Who says Adrian?
Oh, Rocky does.
Okay. Who's the opposition to Rocky?
Apollo Creed.
What color were Apollo Creed's trunks?
Red, white, red, white, blue.
Really? What, no. Like, what would that stand for?
I don't know. I
All right, well, come on, keep going. You're there.
USA.
USA, maybe? I mean,
Talent, Stalin, or Suicide.
Who's the music guy in here, the motif guy? One of y'all are commenting on motifs, music. One of you blogged on it, so. Justin? I mean, if you look at, was there music in the background of King of Kong?
Yes.
I've had one song stuck in my head. That you're the best. Like, that seemed to be playing.
You're the best?
Yeah. It seems like it was going the whole movie. It's stuck in my head since.
I remember they had the Turgon Suite building at one point in the beginning. I forget whether that was as Billy broke his record. But
so is You're the Best a song from Rocky?
Flight of the Bone.
Okay. Speaking of, just because the professor and I keep forgetting to say a word about this, I wanted to say two things just right now, completely off topic. He said the word blog, and it made me remember blog. First of all, I know he sent that link to the professor of music who commented on one of your blogs to you. You need to go to that and click it and read it. It is amazing.
What did the guy say at the bottom?
Let's way to rape.
Yeah, it's like way to rape Google. For
way to rape.
Yeah, that was such a rude comment.
Yeah, that was rude.
That's
on the internet.
What?
That's what's on the internet.
That's a whole class session into itself.
Right. Like, anyway, be sure to look at that because it gives you a really exciting glimpse of the fact that, you know, that blog had been out there, what, 1 day, 2 days, and already somebody had an alert, a Google alert, for keywords or tags. Did you tag it with cello?
It was just
cello.
It was just keyword identifier.
And this guy wrote a really thoughtful response to it and put it on his blog. And so we're out there now. And it occurs to me that one way to get attention for your blog is to reference, link to other blogs. I think if you want to drive traffic toward your blog entry, link to other people's blogs that have similar topics. And they, out of vanity, will go and look who's linked to them. Because there's a little feature that says who is linked to this blog. And so, you know, that's both a trick of the trade, but also a sign that your words are getting out there and that you should be watching the words. The other thing I wanted to say, completely off topic, is Professor Hall and I are regularly at lunch at about 11:30 in the Commons. And several of you all have been coming pretty regularly, and we just invite everybody that doesn't have a class right then to come join us. And you can come join once or twice. You don't have to come every single week, but it's just, it's great. We don't have a good time, and we talk about whatever we want to talk about. So if you can make it, come join us sometime.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Are we here for that? Back to the King of Kong. Who's the protagonist?
Steve Weaver.
We've started it, and we've addressed it, but we haven't got to it. It's not the blog topic, I don't think.
It is one of the blog topics.
It's one of the questions in the blog topic?
It is.
Well, then I defer that question.
Yeah, I think that I want to see them answer it without hearing.
Well, that's a blog topic, so think about it.
That's this week's topic?
That's part of it, part of the topic.
Nice discussion. I mean, there's a kind of a variety of ways to respond to this movie for your blog entry, and that's one of them.
Did anybody like Billy? I mean, this is the thing. I really like Billy. He's got a fancy haircut.
You did. Chris did. You admitted to like...
You like them both.
I like Billy a lot. I just didn't like how they made him look in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, by not playing him. That's
key point.
Yeah.
This movie I have a slant. I tried to get at this by saying, was it fair to both of them? And you all said, yeah. But
no, not at all.
You think it was mean to Billy?
It was so mean to Billy. After what you told me about when, how he played him live, like all those things that made him look like a, I don't know the word for it.
Manipulative.
Cheater.
Cheating.
Yeah,
ego. Maniac, a monomaniac, a narcissist with bad style to boot.
Let's
be
fair. Let's not pick on the.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have your sense of style
with
though.
The door like it's open, like
USA baby.
I mentioned the John Edwards thing where he was just messing with his hair. Remember that? Right? In the primaries where he's messing with his hair for like 15 minutes, and someone just left a camera on him. It's the same kind of shot.
So, being truthful can also be convey a slant from a filmmaker, because a lot happens in the editing room. You know, to make a movie like that, 2 hours movie, I bet they've shot 200 hours of film. You know, who knows how much they shot? Usually, a 10-to-1 ratio is about average in making a movie.
That's shown in theaters today?
Oh, yeah.
When did it come out?
Last year.
Last year, this time.
We took this class for free to the theater.
The Bell Court.
If a really cool gaming movie comes out during this semester,
we'll be there.
Alert us. Field trip. Road trip.
Walking, pedestrian road trip.
Well, that was Bell Court. Right? Yes. You know, we might have to go to Green Hills Mall.
Yeah, Green Hills has a shuttle.
We could get you there in more style than the shuttle.
We're getting a limo?
Indeed.
We'll even get you some hot sauce from that.
So all I really want to drive at is that the perspective of the filmmaker can influence your interpretation of the character.
Could I show you something from Twin Galaxies? Who's been to the Twin Galaxies website? Anybody? No one is inquisitive enough to go to the Twin Galaxies website. This is the present world record holders on Twin Galaxies. So who's at the top? My man from World Record Headquarters. That's right. Billy Mitchell's at the top.
That's the other thing it said on Wikipedia.
So look,
you got a perfect score?
No, I think that's just a percentage of the highest score.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Has Brian Koo not come above?
Now there's a character, Brian Koo, isn't it?
Yeah, he was never brought up. And like, I think he's probably the most pathetic character in the movie, only because his history. He's been playing for 20 years, and then like some movie comes out of nowhere.
I want to offer you guys one point on that. I want you to think Brian Koo, and this may be way too far ahead in the book, but think Grime a Worm Tongue. This is how I think. For those of you who might know that, this is how I think of Brian Koo. So have a think on that for those of you who know Grima or Grima, however you pronounce it.
So
thanks for reminding me his name, Sam. I could not remember that dude's name, and I thought I agreed 100%. Well, he's down at number 8.
Yeah, he was pretty pathetic. Steve Levy beat the record, or has gotten to the kill
screen soon,
right?
Before
and he wants to like cry.
He wanted, he's the dude that wanted to get the kill screen, right?
Yeah.
I was like, well, I thought I'd get there first.
Guys,
is that
that's screen,
the guy
we're
talking about?
Yeah, it's kill screen, potential kill screen.
It's just kind of like, they'll make it.
He's number
8. Good lord, poor guy. So,
I'm not even ranked.
Is there another?
Criticized too much.
Haven't we previously found other sites that have different rankings, or is this the
I don't recall. This is the Twin Galaxies one. That's why I just went back to here. I didn't know that there's other organizations that do this sort of excellent work.
Since board certification is not yet widely available.
And, you know, I think competitive gaming is really something you need to do face-to-face. in the same place, right? And then Steve Wiebe, number two, did it by verified by video.
So let me ask you another question. Do you think it's at least possible that Billy Mitchell has a largely different personality from the one portrayed there?
Not largely different, but moderately different. Still probably the same sarcastic, funny, witty Billy Mitchell, but not as much of a
jerk.
Jerk. Well, there's also like certain things like that could have been liberties taken by the director, like, and they were small, such as thing like the fact that he wouldn't answer his phone for Steve, which I don't know if that's true or not. It might have been, but it like stuck out to me. And the fact that also when he like passed him, and when they were actually together in one spot, like he passed him, he's like, "There's some people you don't talk to or something in competition," or I forget exactly what he said. It's like so their only interaction was like that statement, basically.
Which, you know, in the Olympics, who was our great swimmer this time around?
Phelps.
You know, there was one up close and personal report on him that would talk about how in the locker rooms he'd just stare at opponents like this, you know, and he'd just stare them down, or he'd do this or that kind of gamesmanship. You know, the famous, and so, you know, is that any different from what's going on here?
On the other spectrum, though, if anyone knew who Torres was, she was, like, the number one U.S. women's swimmer.
40 or something.
Yeah, she's, like, 42 and has a kid or something like that. Anyway, she actually made them
stop,
postpone a race so that another person could change their wardrobe because their swimsuit ripped. I mean, if that's not a sign of sportsmanship in
that's huge.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but you have little kids who want, hey, batter, batter, right? Little League. I've been to Little League games. I'm here.
I'm just saying. Like that's, he was giving an example of.
You're the counter example, right?
Yeah.
With swimming, it's different. He was actually playing the game. Billy Mitchell was like looking over his shoulder, and walking by on purpose. Michael Phelps staring them down while they're swimming. He was just getting
them out. Although he probably could.
He did watch them all finish, though.
Thanks for this.
Okay, other topics you want to bring up about the movie? Anything you all want us to talk about in the movie?
I'll put this link to this up. This is an interview with Billy Mitchell after the release of the movie. And it gives you some of Billy's insight into his perspective on the King of Kong, so that you can reflect upon this as you prepare to write your blog topic on Friday. When Bill, and if you read that opening paragraph alone, it says Billy Mitchell never expected to play the role of villain. He didn't anticipate hate mail and badgering phone calls. He didn't think he was a bad guy. Now, do you think when he consented to be filmed and interviewed, did he expect the outcome to be like this?
From this article, no.
Apparently not.
Apparently not, yeah.
I mean, you got to admit that we've spent a large proportion of our time talking about the context of Billy as a villain based upon what was presented to us in the context of the documentary. A brilliant scholar once told me at P.F. Chang's, this is something called ascertainment bias. Sometimes people go into this, this isn't necessarily journalism, it's quite entertaining, but I'm going to put this out there, you may want to take a read on it, and help that inform some of your writing as you go forward to it.
Back to your comments, anything you want to say about the movie?
I think two other things that like added to like Billy Mitchell's image were like the way he dressed, like the like suits and like the hair combo, like it just became like this persona. And then also like his wife was pretty, I don't know, like she seemed kind of like fake the whole time, and never said anything. It was kind of like just on his arm, whereas like Steve's wife was like interactive and like talking, which made him look more like a fake man.
That's right.
showed Steve swimming in the pool with his family and playing with the kids all the time.
Yeah.
So, what relation does this arcade game epoch have to where we are now?
Could you repeat that?
This is obviously, this is taking place in the present, but Donkey Kong is, from the 80s? Is it an 80s game? And the culture of Donkey Kong, the level of the game, the setting of the place, the physical place you play the game is really no longer. I mean, you could find an arcade something, but the entire culture is gone. Have you all seen movies like Hacker? Who's seen Hackers? That has arcade culture, doesn't it? I mean, can you describe any of the arcade? Do you remember it?
I don't know. You could obviously tell it was based on like the old technology, and it almost seemed really cheesy compared to today. But back then, it was probably really cool.
Right. And do you remember who the female star of it is?
I don't remember. I know she's famous now, but I don't.
She's
I'm
famous
not
now.
Actors.
She's like this teenage kid, yeah. And you see it again. And somebody ought to be using IMDb real quickly and getting the female lead of Hackers.
I want to say Jessica Alba, maybe.
No,
Angelina Jolie.
Oh yeah.
Who?
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie is the little hippie nerd in arcade game, and so they have a skateboarder, a computer geek, a nerdy style challenged high school girl who could beat all the guys on it on the games, and so that was also part of that arcade culture. What relation do you see it as having to massively multiplayer online games? Professor Hall began with a history of the gaming. You've seen his video. You know how games have moved forward to where we are now. Do you see any connections between the kinds of experiences we have now in Lord of the Rings or any of the online games and arcade culture?
I think the idea of having a lot of people participating is the same. From we see Donkey Kong, we see there's a crowd of like 20 people watching Steve Weeby play, and you keep records on the same machine that hundreds, if not thousands, of people have played on.
Record keeping is clearly key. It's a key element in each of these worlds that we're in, is that score is always kept. Work makes that point. Remember that there's always a scorekeeper.
You could say while they're going for the score in Donkey Kong, in the massive multiplayer games, they're going for, in the MMOs, they're going for status, like being known as the best, let's say, captain on a server.
And so there's no status in the Donkey Kong company?
The best Donkey Kong.
Oh yeah. So you're saying those are the same. The
right.
So status, scorekeeping, other ways of worship, how's it? The virtual world dimension is a huge difference, clearly. There is a virtual world. It's got those little barrels and those ladders and those ledges.
But you can't go in, just go up.
The social aspect is sort of important because, when you're at the arcade, everyone was sort of gathering around, and they even had like a little party after it was a fun spot or something, and they would go out to eat. Whereas online, you're while you're not physically sitting down with everyone, you're still like part of a group. Like you'll be in your clan or your kinship or your link shell, and it's still really like social where you can just talk about the game. Friends.
Okay. I think that is another really interesting point, that some of the networking capacities that have been developed inside these games and through electronic mediation and electronic communication technologies are actually developments to facilitate some of that social network that had to be created face to face in a Donkey Kong setting, though it was powerfully there. Young people that wanted to go to the arcades wanted to get out of their home and go to the arcades, to be away from people, parents, and to be with friends. So, you know, I think that's a development. We're running out of time. If anybody has any final observation, please make it. Professor Hall, you have a final observation? Then why don't we just call it a day then? If you want to accomplish anything about getting on the game or in a kinship, introduce yourself to Matt Shelton over there. Wave at him, Matt. Let him know you're awake.
You have to register me.
In fact,
do you have my username?
Some of them, you'll just go meet Matt anyway.
That's it. That's all.
I got about seven questions, one at a time.
Do you have a lot of them?
Go ahead, well, he's. Oh, yes. Yeah,
Jim, I was just wondering if you had the red alert from Sonic accounts as one of the classic sounds.
I need to do that.
Do you have Donkey Kong with you at the disc?
The King of Kong?
King of Kong.
My Netflix disc? Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
Well, maybe I'll just get it. I'll just download it myself.
You have Netflix?
Yeah, I can show you. I'll just download it. It's a streaming one, right? Yeah, I got a stream that for my son.
Evan.
How do I get
Evan, I want to know the email that you use to sign up
for. By the way, then, you did not get in the kinship. It said that the name you sent me is not eligible. Is that your user?
You really used to sign up.
What color is in the rain?
Speak up so I can hear it.
And the guy's sitting outside in the rain.
It's
a great name, by the way.
Evan.m.
And did you make a female avatar? You always do?
Yeah.
Good.
Second optimal set.
I had your secretary sign the drop ed sheet. Is that all right?
Pardon me?
Absolutely,
and she gave me a copy of it, but you're not ultra high.
I'm not yet in the class. I'm going to fill it out before the next day. I'm going
to
have the rest of it filled out.
You had the Star Trek question.
I'll
have to get that custom made. Dan, you had a question?
Yeah. The WordPress account. Oh, yeah. I'm going to keep it.
Say what?
WordPress account. How do I make one contribute?
Author?
Yes.
So,
I just left that space.
I know, that thing's like friend here. Matt.
I don't know, like...
Colin,
hey, this is Bayer. I'm back there.
You're like, get out of here.
Adolescent Brown Bayer.
Oh, did you?
He was the guy who opened the door. I got everything for...
I don't know how you set up the account.
DC? N-O? CK? EL? S? At Matt?
At what?
Matt. M-A-C.
.com.
Just read me.
I said if I can contribute.
Oh, yeah, he is.
I don't even know what
the question is.
I have like 20 questions. Look at this.
I tried going up that hill.
So I was like,
which one? Okay, these are all Freeland questions. Epic prologue.
What do you want?
I'm in
the East of
I did those later. I'm going to do.
You guys get there after.
Yeah. I do.
11:30
is
when I get there.
Oh, is it?
Okay, I thought you guys were there before you
came. Okay, so right around the 11:30 time frame.
When do you leave? I'll probably end up leaving outside of like the main building.